Listen, this dude is a piss freak. I mean, his idea of an orgasm is getting watered down. Can I handle it?
$20,000 is a lot of money. Go get a couple of six packs.
I hate beer.
More. Oh,
yo, suckers. Welcome back to another episode of The Projection Booth. I'm Mike White, and here's my partner in crime, Mondo Justin.
Sup?
This week, we're going back to the Sunset Strip, not for a haircut from Mr. Jonathan's salon, but to meet the actual hookers and blades. I'm talking about Candy Tangerine Man, one of the sleaziest blaxploitation flicks around. Released in 1975, Candy Tangerine Man is one of three blaxploitation films directed by Matt Simber, our guest today. The film stars Jonathan Daniels as Baron, a family man by day and hardcore pimp by night, don't you know? Candy Tangerine Man documents his life, fighting other pimps, fending off the cops, and dealing with his girls. And as they say, pimping ain't easy.
Damn, Mike, your pimp hand was strong this week. So why did you pick Candy Tangerine Man to cover?
Well, as you know, I'm a huge fan of Black Shampoo, and after seeing that one, I had to find more films with Black Shampoo star John Daniels in it. He was just in a handful of films, and only a few where he was the star. Candy Tangerine Man was one of those. Daniels had a small role in Don Edmonds' Tender Loving Care before Tangerine Man was his first starring vehicle.
And speaking of vehicles, that car that he's driving is amazing.
I love it. I mean, a pimp, apologies to the Mac, where they say that a pimp is only as good as his product, but a pimp, it really is only as good as his car, and the Baron's got a great one. It's this tricked out Rolls complete with machine guns. I love it.
It's a two-tone Rolls, and he's kind of like the James Bond of pimps.
Yeah. Too bad they didn't have a scene of Q at the beginning, you know, kind of going over all of his, like, little pimp tricks and stuff, so to speak. But more than his car, Baron's got the right attitude. He's ruthless when he needs to be, but he does have a heart, you know. He's kind of got a code of ethics that he'll never turn a girl out. All of his girls are a little more, you know, experienced.
And that's what it takes to be a good pimp.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, he's got the heart of gold, you know, the one Indian girl that he wins in a pool game and has to take her back to the bus stop. It kind of reminded me of the scene that Wings Hauser was talking about in The Art of Dying, where he's trying to take the actress back to the bus stop kind of thing.
Exactly. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't there a book that came out called All I Learned About Pimping I Learned from Candy Tangerine Man?
If there wasn't, there should be. Do you know who might have written that? Was that Sam Jackson?
No, it was actually Iceberg Slim.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, Iceberg was definitely, I think, an influence on this film. I mean, I love how frickin' gritty this movie is. And it's just, it's another one of those, unfortunately, where it's not really available on DVD, or at least not legally available on DVD. And the only version of it that's out there is this shitty VHS version that's just, I mean, it looks like it was shot through this like purple filter or something, where it's just like you can barely see what the hell's going on screen. Even the daylight scenes, it's just like, what is happening here?
You know, anyone that's seen this movie has only seen that version, which is kind of a travesty. You know, it's definitely begging for a release. And can you imagine if it is remastered, restored, put out in a deluxe DVD? It might be like this crazy revelation of black exploitation where people kind of are aghast, you know, and when they see it in actual, you know, correct color.
It would be very interesting because I don't know what's going on probably on like 80% of the screen. You know, you just kind of see some shapes moving around, but then you get the dialogue, which is it's a treat to itself. And the acting definitely comes out when with the crappy version that's around. I mean, the cop, the over the top cop that's constantly trying to get Baron over a barrel, as it were, and his fellow pimps. And one of my favorite characters is I mean, he's only on screen for a few seconds, but the Italian mob boss that that is there when Baron is trying to win that girl in pool. Oh, man, his accent is so authentic. It's terrific.
What I like about it, too, is, you know, we talked about this earlier, but, you know, there's a lot of stereotypes in the movie. But oddly enough, I don't feel that the Baron, John Daniels, is actually stereotyped. He's not a stereotypical pimp. That's the best part about it. Like, you know, he's kind of like the Marlon Brando of pimps. He's soft-spoken, calm, knows what he wants, and knows how to get a bitch.
And I like his whole $200 a day, every day. Just puts it out there, plain and simple. That's all you have to do if you want to stay with the Baron.
And my favorite line in that sequence is, "She's so fine, she's got to be mine."
Well, Mr. Roger.
What do you say, Siciliano? Bang, bang.
What's happening, Baron?
Say, Dusty. I heard you got yourself a new bottom woman.
Yeah. This here's Heather, you know. You know Everdeen.
She's kind of young to be turned out, ain't she?
Whatever's fair and honest, man. She makes her own choice. Ain't nobody breaking her arm to do it.
You and him?
Got something in your mind, man?
She ain't been turned out yet, Dusty. I want her.
Shit! Let me get back to my game.
I'm not bullshitting, man. What do I have to do to get that lady?
Hey, man. You know I don't dig that slave trade. I mean, I thought we went through that, didn't we? I mean, I can't sell you no chick, man. That just ain't croquet, you know? Shit.
How about clumping some of those balls together?
Man, this gal is gonna make me about 10,000 big ones before she wears that slot out. You match that.
Your cash ain't nothing but trash.
All right, my man. Let's make it 9 balls. Simplify things.
You want a break?
Right on.
Go ahead. It's on you.
All right, my man. You step back. So I'm gonna run the rack. Get down. Now, Mr. B, I'm gonna run to 1, 2, and 3 while you stand there looking at me. Check me. I got more moves than Ali. Can you dig it, Mr. B? Right out of sight. All that's left is the 9 ball. All right, Mr. B, this is it. I'm gonna take your shit.
Pimp that he plays in the pool game is definitely, that's the stereotypical pimp. And oh my gosh, yeah. Even with the murky transfer of this film, just the pimp clothes and, you know, the outfits, the cars, everything comes through. But yeah, I can't imagine what it'll look like when we finally get to see this film in full color.
What's that? What's that tricks mom say at the end? Remember, she's like, "Looks like an ice cream cone in that white suit." How how great is that going to look when it's transferred properly and the colors are corrected?
And you get to see him, you know, like in his football jersey there, you know, getting ready to do some yard work and stuff. Because he is a loving family man, you know, which is the difference between the Baron and some of these other, you know, on-screen pimps.
It's a double life.
Yes.
And you could almost say it's like a... You know, like something like The Long Kiss Goodnight was really just ripping off the Candy Cane Dream Man.
Yeah, yeah. But luckily he doesn't have amnesia and come back.
Or does he?
Oh, yeah. You never know. It was almost like that shitty Christian Slater show, you know, where it's the nice guy half the time and then the super spy the other half of the time. Hopefully you didn't have to suffer through that show.
Wait a minute. I love that show. Is that the show The Kid from Reaper?
He's
a security guy and they try to break into security.
No, this was an older one. It was only around for like a few months.
See that. I thought you were talking about the new show called Breaking In or whatever it is.
Oh, no.
That show's great.
I can't even remember the name of this one. It was really bad. But
are you thinking of Cuffs?
No. I had a chance to speak to the director, Matt Simber, recently. Matt Simber's 75 years old, but still going strong. So let's go ahead and roll that interview.
First off, I have to ask, how did the title come about?
Back in the 60s, I don't know if you were familiar with Los Angeles, and I don't know how old you were, but in the 60s, I was a young guy, late 60s. We had an influx of pimps working the Sunset Strip, you know, which is actually a part of West Hollywood. There were nightclubs there, strip joints, and there were a lot of pimps with the wild cars and the wild, you know, aurora around them. And it always kind of fascinated me with clothes, with, you know, how they spent their money. And there was a fellow, there was a nightclub, as a matter of fact, I think it's still there, called The Body Shop. Right on Sunset Boulevard near Crescent Heights, right in the heat of it all. And the guy who owned it was a friend of mine. He lived in Beverly Hills. I had met him many, many times. And he used to say, come on over, visit me, and come in the kitchen and have something to eat with me. He had a kitchen in the back of his nightclub. And in those days, it was just like a burlesque strip kind of place. And he was a white guy, Jewish guy from Beverly Hills, as I said. And every once in a while, I'd be sitting having a cup of coffee with him, and he loved to talk about politics. He was a very bright guy. He loved to talk about politics, etc. And every once in a while, this black pimp would come in who had a girlfriend that was, girlfriend or whatever she was, who was dancing in the show. And he would come in, and he'd sit, and he'd join the conversation. And, you know, he had the wild Cadillac painted whatever with him. And he'd take his hat off and sit down at the table with us. And he was as bright as can be. I mean, he was bright. He was knowledgeable. He had a very good command of the English language, his vocabulary, everything. And what he used to do with this fellow that owned the club, he used to get advice on buying stocks from him. How do you get this? How do you get that? You know, and of course, he always had to be extremely careful because the IRS was always after him. And he had a lot of other problems with legal entities. But I was always amazed at him. And one day I said, now, this guy, and he was kind of handsome, and I imagined him in a Madison Avenue suit with a tie. And to me, this guy could have been on Madison Avenue. He could have been on Wall Street. He could have been anywhere. But, you know, he never got out of junior high school. And it said to me, and of course the 60s was such a revolutionary time, you know, I said, look at this. If this guy had the education, if somebody had it, and, you know, it has borne me out now, because now look at what's happened in the last decade, in the last 15 years, you know, putting aside just the presidency, but so many other areas where black Americans have had the chance. So I came up with this idea. I said, supposing this guy was a Superman image. He changed his clothes at night and became somebody else in the evenings, and throughout the night. He went home and But otherwise, he made a business because that's what he knew to make money. He had to make money. He had a wife. He had a couple of kids. He had a house in the valley. And he wanted to earn a living. And what else was possibly left to him? He couldn't walk in any door, even in those days, and sell used cars. So this is how I came up with the Candy Tangerine Man. And then one thing led to another. Before you know it, I said, this guy's got to be exceptional. He's got to have, I mean, we have to take the fantasy to a different height. So I found this Rolls Royce where it was going to be the machine guns and the stuff, because we were going through a heavy Bond period at the time. I said, everybody likes touches of that. And then I went to Barry White, who was, if you're familiar, a very popular singer at the time. And when I finished the film, I didn't have any more money left to spend for music. So I went and had a hamburger with him up on Sunset Boulevard. And I said, Barry, just look at this film. He looked at it. He said, man, that is the wildest film. He said, the neighborhoods, and he said, the brothers are going to go crazy for this film. So he said, I'll do the music for you. He had a group that he owned called Smoke. And son of a gun, he took the picture into his, he had a little studio on La Brea and Sunset, and they started running it, and they came up with the music. It really had that kind of an interesting history. But that's how, because everybody said to me, Matt, are you crazy? You're making a picture where the hero is a pimp? This is crazy, you know? It's like making a film where the pedophile is the hero. And I said, yeah, but that only makes the challenge even greater. There were a lot of things happening at the time. Jim Brown, who was a friend of mine, looked at the picture and he said, we always had trouble lighting black people in films. He said, this is the first film where I really seen how you took the pains with the lights and made it right. You know, everything was in balance. There were so many elements. And I never thought it was going to take off the way it did. I mean, you can't believe when it opened in Chicago, it opened on the Loop, you know, in one of these gigantic theaters with 900 seats in the orchestra. And UA brought me into Chicago. And the first showing was at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I got there about 9:05 with a guy from UA. And we stood in the back. There wasn't an empty seat in the theater. I had never gone to see a film. And here I had the Black Six, which had made a fortune. And played all over. I went in, and I never was there when there was a black audience. And I suddenly realized they talked to one another during the picture. Now, you tell them, you know, they talk to the screen. No, don't do that. Get that guy over there. And then they talk to one another about the characters. And it was a fabulous experience.
Why Candy Tangerine Man? Why that title?
I wanted his car to be painted candy apple red. And there's that candy look of a paint job, you know, and it has the sheen to it. So I called him the Candy Tangerine Man. You know, get back Jack, give him no jive. He's the baddest cat in 75. And all that kind of thing. If you remember the great scene, I mean, I call it a great scene, not because of me. The great scene when they're shooting pool, I'm going to take your shit and that girl's going to be mine. And, you know, when they're talking about, you know, I had to give him a redeeming value. So when he meets the Indian girl, you know, he wins her, and then he sends her home. He, she's too young. He doesn't want to use her. And he doesn't want, because the whole idea about the Candy Tangerine Man, he never turns a girl out. He only deals with the girls that are already turned out. So he doesn't take an innocent girl and make a prostitute out of her, you know. And I thought that would come across, because when he says, I want that girl, he's standing at the bar. And they shoot pool for the girl, 10,000 against the girl. When he wins her, he takes her to the bus stop, gives her some money, and says, get the hell out of here. Of course, she never does. She comes back.
Tell me more about the car. I mean, the car is almost one of the stars of the film.
I bought the car on the campus of UCLA. So somebody told me there was a car for sale that was exactly the kind of car I want, a Rolls Royce 57, and it was parked in one parking lot, and the guy saw a sign on it that said for sale. Can you imagine? I paid $2,500. I wish I had that car today. $2,500, and I'll never forget, it cost me $800 to paint it. And then, of course, the two machine guns that are in the little lights, that's what I was looking for. There's seven models I used to have, you know, where he presses the button and he shoots his way out. You know, that was the one thing from the black community. They said I made too much of a very attractive hero out of him, and that the kids would want to emulate him. You know, I said, well, the picture's rated R, the kids shouldn't be in the theater.
So how did you go about casting the film? Because that's, you know, John Daniels only made like three, well, I guess he made five or six movies, but he's such a star in that film.
How did I find him? My production manager, I was looking for guys, and every guy that came in had a sleaze to him. They were too slick. And my production manager said, you know, Matt, one night, let's go down La Brea to South La Brea. There's a nightclub there. And they said, there's a guy who owns the nightclub that is so cool, but he's got a very straight look also about him, which is really not a nice thing to say, this straight look, unstraight look, whatever. And his name is Daniels. Why don't you come in down and see him? Because he takes acting lessons, and he wants to be an actor. Maybe he's been in the movie or something. So I went down, and I saw him. And, you know, I talked to him. That was the thing. I sat, and I talked to him, and I said, this is my guy. I know it is. I made the deal. Years later, I'm sitting and I'm watching a black actor that I had never seen before who's playing a preacher. And the black actor is talking in a rhythm. I said, that delivery is Daniels. Because it's so unique and different. And if you listen to the Candy Tangerine Man and listen to him, you'll see how much he sounds like Samuel Jackson and has the same verbiage delivery as Samuel Jackson. Samuel Jackson, most guys will say, well, what we mean is, and Jackson will say, well, what we mean is, you know, he has a rhythm of speech that is Daniel's rhythm. Now, years later, he's on some TV show, and he says, one of my favorite films of all time is The Candy Tangerine Man. And it had such an impact, because it was so funny. The first time I saw Samuel Jackson on the screen was, he wasn't even playing the lead. He was a preacher giving a speech. And I said, my God, that speech belongs to Daniels. And when I saw Quentin Tarantino came on the set of a film I was shooting, he said, we talked, and he said, you know, he said, Sam Jackson keeps saying, even till today, The Candy Tangerine Man is his favorite film to watch. Isn't that wild that this film so affected him? Back in those days, blacks used to go to the theater when it was summertime because it was the only place that was cool. You know, I mean, so you could imagine that they may see movies, if they like it, over and over. And they would never play my films, the black films, they would never play them in the white neighborhoods. The theater owners loved them for all the black neighborhoods, except when Black Six opened on Broadway in New York.
You made The Black Six, Pop Goes the Weasel, and Candy Tangerine Man, and they, at least the information that I'm getting is that they were written by a guy named George
Theakos.
Theakos, okay. Can you tell me more about him? Because there is, like, no information about him out there.
I know. I tried. You know how many times I've tried to look him up? George Theakos was the father of my secretary, and he was a very hip guy, Greek-American. And we used to kid each other, because I'm Italian-American, and we used to kid each other back and forth. And he had motorcycles, and he said, you know, I'm a writer, you know, I could write screenplays and this and the other. I write screen. I said, well, you know, bring it in and let me see it. And he brought him in. They were good ideas. Those films, you know, I would tell him I want to do a picture. I have a deal with the Teamsters. They have a hotel up in Lake Tahoe called King's Castle. And they will give me a deal of free rooms and food if I go in January in the slow month and bring a film crew and shoot a movie there. And that's how Mean Joe Green, that's how the Lola Falana, that's how we shot Lady Coco, which I had originally titled Pop Goes the Weasel. And that's Georgie.
Yeah, for a while I thought maybe he was like a, you know, a pen name you were using or something, because it was just like I couldn't find any information.
Yeah, no, I understand. I've used pen names before, and Glow and the Gorgeous Ladies of Restaurant. I use pen names, and I do that occasionally. But no, George was an actual guy who really existed. And in most cases, I left him as the writer. But I did a lot of writing on the stuff, you know, and developing. But he made very conscientious contributions, you know. I mean, he had good ideas. And he's the actor in the film. He always wanted to be an actor. And he said, I'll help you with the scenes. I'll help this. But I got to be in the film. He's in the Black Six. He plays the guy at the end. He's the little weasel guy who's the messenger in the Black Six. And he's the Italian mafia guy in the bar scene in Candy Tangerine Man.
Oh, that's great.
He's the one who says, I wanted that guy. I wanted him. And he says, well, get him. And he slaps the guy.
And I love how thick his accent is in that, too.
I know. It's a little stretch. But he was, that's a no good. And I said, okay, you want to go with that? Okay, fine. I said, you sound like my grandfather.
Just as an aside, I love how the Indian girl has like the feathers and stuff in her hair.
That's how people dressed in the 60s. You know, we had the hippies along Sunset Boulevard. They wore beads and they walked things. She's played down. You know, I mean, you walk down Sunset Boulevard in 1968, 69, the world was totally different. There were all the kids, the flower children. They all dressed with crazy ribbons in their hairs, and they didn't have the tattoos. They had more creative stuff about themselves, I always thought. I loved the flower children. I thought they were fabulous, and they're almost forgotten. Somebody should do something about the flower children, because it's a shame that they're forgotten. They were such a major contribution to this country. I mean, they brought down the Vietnam War. They literally brought down the Vietnam War, and they turned the colleges, and they took a lot of abuse.
Kind of going on the other end of the spectrum, though, what was it like working with the actual hookers and blades of the Sunset Strip?
We really used many of the people you saw in the film, not the key roles, but many of the people you saw were the hookers. You know, we took hookers off the streets and offered them roles. They were very cooperative, very good, very anxious. They all wanted to be in it, and they wanted to know where the picture was playing. And you know what they did with the car? The UA raffled it off. Yeah, all across the country, they raffled off, and a certain number won the car.
Because I talked to John Daniels forever ago. And he was saying, you know, somebody in Detroit has that car, and I wanted that car.
Everybody wanted that car.
I can understand why. But yeah, since I'm from Detroit, he's like, do you know where that car is? I'm like, no, I don't know where that car is. If I did, I'd be looking at it myself. But
somebody, I think the kid in the film, remember the kid who played his sidekick that robbed the house and came up with all those, the bonds, you know? He was the one that UA hired to try, remember at the end, he takes over for the Candy Tangerine Man, remember?
Yeah, that's a great ending. I love that.
You like that ending? That's a good take. I made it up as we went along, and we were shooting the final scene. I said, wait a minute. I said, we can't leave this thing, you know? And what happened was UA hired him to take the car on tour with the film. He may have wangled the car for himself. I don't know. I didn't care at the time. There was so much money rolling in on that film.
I'm a big fan of movies of this era, movies of this genre and stuff. And I've seen in other films The Institute of Oral Love, and I have yet to find out what the hell that building is.
That was the operation of Marvin Miller. Marvin Miller owned that company. He was a big publisher. He was the guy that broke. He's the one that took the case all the way to the Supreme Court. And he's in all the record books now. He's the one who became, who broke this definition of what pornography is. And he had that company. And he produced a lot of films that they give me credit for, which I didn't make. I made He and She, Man and Wife. That's it. I never made Black is Beautiful. I guess they all assumed I did because I did black movies, but I never did. I didn't make that picture. And he made another film called Sex in the Comics. And he published a lot of books. He died quite some time ago.
What goes on behind the door of the Institute of Oral Love?
Oh, I have no idea.
You just use the exterior?
No, but I can guess.
It was a dentist's office, right?
I'm just kidding. I don't know. I mean, they were drilling, huh?
So you said that they're restoring Candy Tangerine Man in Portugal. Why Portugal?
Well, because I happen to be working there, and they have a lab there with a lot of talented people, and they work a lot cheaper than they do here. They have their wonderful artistry, because that's what restoration is. It's artistry and time-consuming. And the reason it's so difficult to do is because why it's so expensive is because it takes so much time.
Yeah, I have to say that the only version I've ever seen of it is that unicorn video, and it's so tough to see what's going on, but I've seen it enough where I hope I know what's going on. But yeah, I can't wait for a DVD release. That'll be amazing.
I hope so. We're trying real hard to make it too.
Well, if there's anything I can do to help, I mean, I can't think of anything, but if there is, you know, even just spreading the word, you let me know.
What breaks my heart right now, I'm trying to find a first reel, and they've got all the other reels, but I don't have that first reel. I'm sorry that you're seeing such horrible versions of this film, because the original was really good. If you ever hear about a really good first reel that somebody might have, you know, we're using Quentin stuff, but the first reel is not good.
You're still directing stuff. Can you tell me a little bit about your new film that you're doing?
I'm now working in Portugal. I went over as a consultant to the Portuguese government because they're building in the south of Portugal, which is only 5.5 hours from New York. They're building enormous studios, a big film complex. Universal's putting in a theme park. And they're going to have huge stages. And if you got a pencil in your hand, write down picture Portugal and go on the internet, go on Google and just Google picture Portugal, and you'll see the whole thing of what's happening. And I made a 6 or 7 minute piece that's on there, with a narrator named Joaquin de la Meda. Joaquin de la Meda, if you see him, you'll say, oh, God, I've seen that guy in 100 movies. He was in, he plays lots of movies as villains and American films. He's actually Portuguese, and most people think he's Spanish because of what, but he is Portuguese. In Clear and Present Danger, he was the villain with Harrison Ford. And then he was, what's his name, brother? Antonio Banderas' brother in that Wild film. Joaquin was in Desperado as well. And he's made lots of movies. I mean, Joaquin is just television here. He lives here. And I made that seven-minute piece for the government to promote, you know, what they were intending to do. So those are the movies that I'm, you know, I have a deal with them when they've got all their financing. Portugal's had a lot of problems. And we're still, in fact, I'm going back there in 2 weeks to continue.
Ahoy, mateys. This is K.A.B., Antonio Bay. Stevie Wayne here, beaming a signal across the sea. I'll be here playing music all through the witching hour. I'm still waiting to hear from that weatherman. But in the meantime, stay here with me. Be sure to visit our sponsor, Paracinema Magazine. They're the source for all your genre movie needs. Check them out online at paracinema.net. Tell them Stevie sent you. Keep me turned on for a while, and I'll do my best to do the same for you.
The smooth sound. Fabulous 1340. KAB.
And we're back. It was great talking to him. He's still right on spot for being 75 years old. I hope when I'm 75, I'm as sharp as Mr. Simber is. Candy Tangerine Man, one of many pimp films, or at least I thought there were a whole lot of pimp films until I started trying to make a list of other films that were going on in the same era where they were starring pimps. You know, there's King George and Coffee, and there's Nichelle Nichols and the rest of the pimps in Truck Turner. And then it's Willie Dynamite and the Mac are really like the pimps when it comes to movies starring pimps. And I don't know if you would consider like Sweet Sweetback to be a pimp movie or not. But yeah, there weren't a whole lot of, you know, there were definitely some pushers and, you know, in this era of blaxploitation I'm thinking of. And then really the pimp came back to the big screen when it came to Hustle and Flow, where the whole film was about a pimp character. And I was really glad that in Candy Tangerine Man, they didn't have the crutch of like, hey, I'm a pimp, but I also want to be a famous rap star. So that was really nice.
Can we actually sing It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp from Hustle and Flow?
The Oscar-winning song, Hard Out Here to Be a Pimp?
By 3-6 Mafia?
Yes.
Let me just interject something, too.
Whip that trick.
That's right. Whip that trick.
Yeah.
I actually want to say that, you know, while we are covering a black exploitation film, you are missing a film of the era slightly. Which came at the end of the era.
Yes.
Which is, and we mentioned him earlier, Mr. Wingshauser in Vice Squad, who was the first white pimp.
Really?
On screen.
Nice. Nice. Okay.
That's all I got to say on that.
All right. It must have been very hard out there for that pimp.
Listen, that pimp was probably the most vicious of the pimps in your list of pimps.
Yeah.
Films that you... that you've mentioned here, actually.
Well, I don't know, man. I mean, Goldie was pretty good in the Mac, you know. I mean, he was very quiet, but he definitely had the power over those bitches.
Were you a fan of Hustle and Flow? Because I really liked that film a lot, actually.
You did or did not?
I did.
Mm-hmm. You did? Mm-hmm. I thought it was all right. I have seen it once, and that's pretty much all I need to see. I like the music from it.
But you own the soundtrack.
Yeah, I'm more of a fan of the classic stuff, I guess. Have you ever had a chance to see Willie Dynamite?
Yeah, I've seen everything you mentioned, actually.
I think that's probably one of my favorite pimp movies. It's right up there with The Mac for me, though Willie Dynamite, I feel kind of bad for Willie throughout the movie because nothing really goes well for Willie in his whole trade.
It never goes good for a pimp in general.
No, no. I mean, yeah, I liked that King George really didn't have a whole lot of bad stuff going on with him. And he had that freaking awesome soundtrack song. You know, he had his own theme as he's, you know, strutting along there and stuff. Almost as good as Fly Guy from I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka.
Which is a great homage to 70s black exploitation.
Oh,
as well.
Yeah. And especially the player's ball scene in there.
Pimp of the year.
When he's laying down the poetry.
Through rain, sleet, or snow. My bitch better have my money. I'll put my foot straight up her ass.
That boy's a Shakespeare.
Man's a Shakespeare. That's right. You could actually throw in a little mention of Harvey Keitel in Taxi Driver as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was a pretty good pimp.
He was a damn good pimp.
Yeah.
I heard he was good anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
like, John Hinckley liked him.
But yeah, getting back to Candy Tangerine Man, I mean, it's a hard movie to watch. I mean, when you talk about when people talk about exploitation films and they talk about, you know, grindhouse films and 42nd Street and all that kind of stuff, this one to me seems like it would be a perfect film for that kind of venue. You know,
sure.
It's down and dirty. You know, I mean, there's just some excessive violence to it, which I find terrific. There's not a whole lot of redeeming qualities, at least to the characters, other than the Baron. Man, it's rough around the edges.
It is. And to be honest with you, I've probably only seen Candy Tangerine Man 4 times now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first time I watched it, I couldn't even get through it.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know why, if that was maybe I was just in the wrong, you know, mindset or if I was distracted. But, you know, the second time I watched it was, you know, a few weeks later. And I got through it. I thought it was fair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think it's you know, by any means the top 10 in the genre. But, you know, at third time I watched, I appreciated it a little bit more, and I watched it again this morning, and I had a really enjoyable time watching it again. And I, you know, I still don't think it's a standout in the genre, but it's super fun. It's got a ton of quotable lines.
Oh, yeah.
It's got some really great scenes, you know, and I think, I know you're a huge fan of John Daniels, and, you know, he does make this movie because, like I said, he's not a stereotypical pimp. He's not jive walking. He's, you know, he's more like a real mellow, kind of, you know, Marlon Brando playing it cool type of guy. You know, he never loses his cool, you know, except for the 18-minute sequence, the slow-mo sequence where he's blowing away everyone. And he shoots the girl in the tit.
Right.
And the guy with the hook goes down, and the guy, there's a guy that, the guy screaming, going, yeah! You know, great scenes in movies when they actually, when they pull you out of the movie. When mm-hmm. you're just like, how long have we been in this scene? And then you really appreciate that scene. Just like, wow, this is really great, actually. Like, I love that scene. It just goes on forever.
Two of my favorite scenes are, well, there's the pool scene, which I've talked about incessantly now. And the other one is the cops hanging over the edge in their car. Those cops are awesome. Those cops seem like they're, you took the two cops from the Mac and you just like, you know, times them by 100 or something, because they're not just out to get Baron. They want to humiliate him. They want to just, you know, completely destroy him. That scene, it reminds me a lot of David Patrick Kelly in Commando, where it's like, remember when I said I would kill you last?
I lied. Matrix! Matrix! You said you'll kill me last! Remember? Yes, I did, Sully.
What happened to Sully? I had to let him go.
Right, and then, you know, you and I were talking about earlier, it's one of the cops is played by George Buck Flower, mm-hmm. who was in John Carpenter's They Live, The Fog. He was in Back to the Future.
Right.
Remember, he was that, he was the bum in Back to the Future. Where he's like,
oh, yeah.
Remember, he, like, wakes up off the park bench and rubs his eyes when Marty mm-hmm. comes back to 1985 or whatever it is.
Yeah, he had a great voice. I loved his voice, at least in the later films, just all kind of gravelly and stuff. But the other one was he was kind of the calmer of the two. The other one is just like laughing maniacally, just going crazy.
He's totally coked out. You know, laugh is like, you know, when they're about to rape the, you know, the poor Asian girl who's never been turned out. You know, she's got little scabs on her boobies.
Right.
And he's like,
let's go to the coach and horses and pick up the pieces.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
Something I wanted to hear first.
Oh. Oh.
He reminds me of the cop that's there with the Zaftig African American hooker in the Mac, who's like giving the whole speech about armpits and giraffes and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, that guy is calm compared to the cop from Candy Tangerine Man. And I love the Baron's neighbors too, that he keeps running into.
Yeah, the women.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, it just plays on so many stereotypes. You know, you got the overweight woman in the car, like, I'm hungry, let's go. and then you got, you know, I guess it's so interesting. It's actually, when you think about it, it's really kind of interesting that everyone's stereotyped but John Daniels' character.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Even though, like, his wife is stereotypical, and the white people, the African-American people are stereotyped, and they make sure that they drop a ton of N-bombs in the film. And it does really feel it does feel intentional and almost hateful.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, you know?
Well, the one that really got me, my favorite dialogue bit, is the guy who just keeps calling him a motherfucker.
Sound all tied up. Ain't you working?
Ain't nobody gonna be working for you anymore, motherfucker.
Hold on a minute, man. That's foul language you're using.
Is it? Motherfucker!
The only mother I ever fucked was yours, and she was a shitty lady.
Incessant MFs.
Oh, yeah.
Especially man. That pool scene, you know. He's What's that? The one guy says something that there's a white guy in the suit who's like, fuck you, motherfucker. I'm just like, wow, that's kind of unintentional. It seems like really forced.
Yeah, yeah.
They must have had like a count, you know, like a Roger Corman. He had like, you know, nudity. Must have nudity every 10 minutes. And there must have been like, man, someone must be like, all right, we need a motherfucker every 7 minutes.
Right, yeah. Yeah, this one makes the Harlem Shuffle just seem kind of, you know, like clean compared to
when you throw Red Fox in anything, there's going to be hundreds of MFs.
Exactly.
That's what made him brilliant, actually.
Yeah. There's a good amount of humor in here, too, which I like. There's humor between the violence, and then there's, you know, there's a little bit of drama here. We don't know what's going to happen with some of these characters, and we kind of invest in them, at least in the Baron. And I should say that this Baron should not be confused with the guy who is in the film The Baron. That is definitely a different film. Quite a bit.
And don't confuse him with Baron Harkonnen either.
No, definitely not. Though Baron Harkonnen, his mannerisms would kind of fit along the line of the cop in this one, you know.
I'd pay $20 if someone could Photoshop John Daniels' suit from Candy Tangerine Man onto Baron Harkonnen.
Oh, that'd be nice. Any other thoughts about Candy Tangerine Man before we sign off for the week?
Well, I think it's a really fun movie, and if you're a black exploitation fan and you haven't seen it, then shame on you. It's really enjoyable. It's got a lot of quotable bits in it, and you will be walking around saying, "She's so fine, she's got to be mine." I said to my wife this morning, and I got slapped in the face, so she doesn't like that.
She does a lot of slapping of you.
Yep.
You might want to think about putting out a PPO.
Well, I think I'm going to wear a face mask, like an anti-slap mask.
Oh, there you go.
Because it just works better. But
maybe like the gimp mask from Pulp Fiction or something, or
well, I have that and it hurts still because it's just it's a slap on leather. It doesn't really protect that much.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you should probably turn it too so that the spikes are on the outside instead of on the inside.
Yeah, that does make sense actually.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so that brings us to the end of another episode of The Projection Booth. Next week we're going to storm the beaches with Sam Fuller's The Big Red One. And in the meantime, please visit our website projection-booth.com for more goodies, including links to our Facebook and Twitter pages. And please stop by iTunes to give The Projection Booth a few stars and maybe even a nice review, you know, because we're doing something nice for you. Maybe you should do a little something nice for us. It really helps. So now I'm going to get my rolls, get my money, and listen to some Smoke on the 8-track player.
crazy things in the streets. Got a couple hoes working on the changes for me, but I gotta keep my game tight like Kobe on game. Not like taking from a hoe, don't know no better. I know that ain't right. I've seen people killed, done seen people deal, done seen people live in poverty with no meals. It's fucked up where I live, but this is how it is. It might be new to you, but it's been like this for years. It's blood, sweat, and tears when it come down to this shit. I'm trying to get rich before I leave about this bitch. I'm trying to have things, but it's hard for a pimp. But I'm praying and I'm hoping to God I don't slip. Bullets every day, niggas hating on me cause I got holes on the tray. But I gotta stay paid, gotta stay above water. Couldn't keep up with my hoes, that's when shit got harder. North Memphis where I'm from, I'm 7th Street bound. When niggas all the time end up lost and never found. Man, these girls ain't recruit things, leave a big headache. I'm hoping every night they don't end up being dead weight. I got a snow bunny and a black girl too. You pay the right price and they're both due. That's the way the game goes. Gotta keep it strictly gripping. Gotta have a hustle tight. Maybe change all these women here.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. You could win an Academy Award for that. Hmm?